Welcome to episode 1 of Roni Zone Radio. Thank you for downloading this episode. We're very excited about this show. And one of the things that sets this show apart is there is no set subject that we are going to constantly be covering. For instance, Star Wars or films or anything like that. Roni Zone Radio is what I want to talk about when I want to talk about it. And it's going to be varying subjects throughout every episode. You're never going to hear basically the same thing every episode. I'm going to try and keep it fresh. I'm going to try and keep it different. I'm going to definitely be a little controversial, but I definitely want to have things that are interesting to learn about. And I hope that as you listen to these episodes that you learn something, that you think about things differently, see things from a different angle. Some things you hear will make you happy. Some things will make you sad. Some things will make you mad. Some things you won't care about. And some things, hopefully, you will. And I hope that you will join me on this ride every episode. Here we are, episode 1. Our subject this show is Star Wars versus Star Trek. We all know about the two franchises, and I've had the great pleasure of getting two, what I consider to be experts, two great friends of mine, William Lundeen and Bill Webb, in the room. We sat them down in front of microphones, and we covered Star Trek versus Star Wars. We also have some special music that I don't believe anyone's ever heard of before. This band is called Twin Sister. We have two songs. The first song we're going to play is called He's No Good to Me Dead, and the second song we're going to play later is called Scoundrel. So I hope you enjoy it. And now we go into Twin Sister, He's No Good to Me Dead. That was Twin Sister with their song, He's No Good to Me Dead. And now, Star Trek versus Star Wars.
Space, the final frontier. Boldly go where no man has gone before.
The opinions expressed by our guest today are not the opinions of Jeff Roney or Jeff Roney Designs. I have two wonderful guests here today. I have William Lundeen.
Hello.
In the blue corner. And I have Bill Webb. In the yellow corner.
In the other blue corner.
Right. Hey,
good evening. Good afternoon. Good morning.
We're going to talk about Star Trek versus Star Wars, and I'll let Mr. Webb introduce Star Trek. Give us a little background, where it came from.
Star Trek. That's that show from the 60s, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Big fan. Gene Roddenberry had a vision that continues to grow today, decades after the original series, and you know, went through a period of time, obviously, late 70s, where it just kind of fell out of favor with the public, and then the motion pictures came along and revitalized the whole thing. New television series that are still being shown, that are in syndication, will be forever at this point. You know, no diss on the Star Wars fans, but it's the thinking man, Star Wars, basically. It got beyond just good and evil and, you know, guys wearing black and guys wearing white and which could have been done as a cowboy western. Yeah, don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of Star Wars, but Star Trek, it was full of innovations. We had the first flip phones. The things that they talked about in Star Wars, Star Trek.
Okay.
You know,
don't sell it.
Okay, fine.
Don't miss him on Dean.
Hi, how you doing?
Give us a little bit of intro on Star Wars. Where it came from.
Oh, okay. Well, if I had to make up the history of Star Wars, it would start off something like this. When George Lucas was a boy. Wait, no, I probably shouldn't go back that far. But when Star Wars came out in 1977. Consider the nature of science fiction films that have been put out. We'd had 2001, A Space Odyssey, which basically gave an anti-utopian point of view on what space exploration would be like for mankind early on. And then, really not much else. I mean, the state of the art in, what do you call that, special effects, really wasn't all that special. And there wasn't much going on. I mean, you're still talking about people doing the dramas. We'd had the Towering Inferno and Jaws, and that wasn't really exciting as far as special effects. Science fiction, as far as movies and TV, really seemed to me like it was a wasteland. It didn't seem like there was a lot of enthusiasm. Most science fiction people were reading the books. Many of the magazines for science fiction short stories and stuff were not quite as vibrant as they used to be in the 50s and 60s. So it seemed like there was this void out there. And after Lucas had done some of his early films like that, shoot, what was that movie with the THX 11? 1138. Right, like IG 30. So that was an interesting movie if you've ever seen it, but obviously not done with the hugest of budgets and kind of stark and a little bit wooden in its feel, too. So when Star Wars came out, it gave a chance for the public to fall in love with the idea of the epic that was science fiction, not just something like Ben-Hur or something like that, going back to biblical times or olden days, but something completely different. I mean, it wasn't one of these movies about big medieval battles and ships and dance numbers and things like that. This was a love story. It was a rescue story, not quite like The Great Escape, but similar. I mean, we had good versus evil. We had young people and old people. We had these robots. What were robots doing around there? I mean, I'm thinking, what was the other movie that came out in the 70s with robots in it? Was it Big Blue or some sort of Disney movie with the Black Hole? Yeah, that was
Dark Star had robots.
Well, now, Dark Star, very interesting movie, but not something which I think probably had wide viewership. That and Silent Running also.
Right.
But that, once again, this was another movie that almost had its 60s anti-utopian political bent to it of, oh, okay, well, we're jacking up the world and the universe, and really, is humanity doomed and shit?
Great. Now, both of you, let's give five things you loved about Star Trek. Just right at the top of your head.
Jadzia Dax from Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. And I'll go back. Almost every movie, well, except for maybe the motion picture, the first one, and TV series for Star Wars has had a good balance of male, female, and who knows what characters. And I think that it showed that the male and the female characters had good character development and depth to them. I think you had interest in both. In many action flicks that you might see, they tend to be geared towards either it's a cop buddy film with guys, or it's a woman's adventure club with women. But it seems like they pick one gender to actually draw out, and another gender to either ignore or to make into caricatures. And I never felt that way with the Star Trek series. And some of the women were really hot.
I think
I'll count as two things.
Like the point of the Star Trek, one of the innovations of Star Trek early on was the fact that they had multiple alien species they would introduce from episode to episode. I'm going back to the original TV show, and we learned for the first time, you know, getting away from the B movies of the 50s, that aliens can be intelligent and non-hostile, that they can actually be allies, that they can be more intelligent than us. Of course, we've always feared that with this fear of flying saucers and all that kind of stuff that the mainstream tries to ignore. But the innovations of the show that people thought were so futuristic in the late 60s, early 70s, we realized before the turn of the century, a lot of those things. Of course, we haven't got transporters yet, but you know, that's one of the things I really loved about the show. And it's similar with the Star Wars. We had intelligent, friendly alien species again. But you know, one of the cool things about Star Trek, and I have just pointed out, right, because the first thing that came to my mind when you asked the question was the blonde yeoman. And I don't remember her name offhand. It didn't matter to me too much. I was
Yeoman Rand?
It could have been Rand, yes. Yeah. And beyond that, any of Kirk's girls, probably one of my favorites.
I mean, who doesn't love a green-skinned alien?
Absolutely. Ooh. And she can turn colors, you know, like a chameleon, you know. No. Okay. Yeah, I'm a true fan. I was a fan of the original series and of the first six motion pictures. I never got involved in the after series very much. The Next Generation, I really was not much a fan of. I'm sure they were done better special effects. That's another thing, too. You look at what they could do with the limited budget they had back in the 60s.
What's her name?
You know, you get away from the fact that every alien atmosphere is red. And if you overlook that, they were interesting human stories that didn't involve humans all the time. But, like I said, the little side note is my mother actually dated William Shatner. And, you know, early on when I was
she was a wonderful 10 years old,
watching these shows at home with my parents, you know, we would constantly, during commercial turn, and say, that guy could have been my dad. How much money would we have? You know?
Wow.
So that's some of the positives.
Well, he would have bought you a horse, and you could have seen him on TV all the time.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's great. You know, Goldie Hawn was also in one episode. When they went to Earth.
I didn't know that.
Well, you know, a lot of people made up episodes. Of course, Ricardo Montalban with his real Corinthian leather.
Correct.
But this goes back to what Bill was saying over there about the alien races. You know, they were also presented as though they would have their own sets of needs and desires, not these one-dimensionals, we are going to conquer Earth or we are better than everyone else. They were presented like we would think of humans in a normal, say, fictional story, you know, having needs and desires, concerns, families, and they had them too. And especially Star Trek, the first episode, not only did we meet aliens, but you had to look at the crew makeup of the Starship Enterprise. We had people representing all different ethnic backgrounds and cultures. Star Trek had the first televised interracial kiss between Kirk and Lieutenant Uhura, and
first starring role for any African-American female, by the way, in television.
Wow.
So that's something, I think, of value in that it said, look, we're moving forward where people have to get together to explore things, and they're going to come across new things. And rather than always confronting it with fear, suspicion, and violence, why don't we look at, you know, going into a goal-based and, what's that word that's not competition? Cooperation.
Okay.
Let's cooperate a little bit.
Sounds like a corporate video here.
Yeah, it really does. Okay, so I'll shut up there.
The United Federation of Planets is what you're talking about. I mean, for the first time, we're looking at an opportunity for a galaxy to have the chance to come together and all worlds benefit from the knowledge and experiences of all other worlds, the ones that are willing to and don't want to eat us.
Yeah, yeah, the ones that want to eat us, they kind of suck. But,
yeah,
you know,
they're not asked to join the club.
Can't we all just get along?
Yeah.
Another thing I liked about the Star Trek universe was I like some of their technology. You mentioned the teleporter, and I think that's something which, boy howdy, would just be real special. If I had plenty of money so I could devote myself to research, which often doesn't pay off itself, I would love to be one of those people working on that. And like you mentioned, the flip phone, the communicators, you know, that was something. Other than the Jetsons, you know, with their TV/phone/video conference systems, this was the first time that you really said, hey, look, it's doable. Why not just do it? Supposedly, Ray Bradbury, the writer, had some input in some of the first suggestions of things like credit cards and satellites. So then we have Star Trek having these communicators, which, you know, come down to being like our cell phones, unless we want to give Maxwell Smart, Agent 99, missed it by that much,
world's
the credit
first
for those things.
World's smelliest cell phone.
I know, smell phone.
Now, okay. We've kind of got started. We've made some good points here. What was Roddenberry's impetus to create this show?
I think he wanted chicks.
I think he wanted to make some money.
Okay. So there was no overriding reason to do it. I mean, you know, we've kind of mentioned that he had some probably political underpinnings of a view of life, what could be, when people work together, cooperate, whatever.
You know, I never researched this, and probably that would be a good place to start if we want to know for sure.
Okay.
But I would guess that he probably grew up, and so he had the experiences of the 30s and 40s. He probably did the pulp science fiction readings, and he probably wanted to see this thing. I mean, color television started coming around during the 40s, you know, right about the World War II era, and after that went into Korea. And so, you know, that generation of folks went through a lot of conflicts where, you know, there was a lot of, you know, hatred throughout the world, and they got to see rapid technological advancement, but always in the guise of something to aid them in warfare. And so Star Trek gave them a chance to write about something. What would it be like if we cooperated? You know, it was important, I think, that they showed that, especially during the Cold War era, they showed, you know, that they had, you know, Chekhov and Sulu involved. And Chekhov, you know, every now and then maybe asides about the Russians invented it first. But I think that was important. I believe that he probably had his experiences from reading science fiction and from going through the turbulence of the 40s and 50s, what was World War II and Korea, probably as a backdrop for what he wrote. I know my grandfather used to mention that he knew him. I don't know exactly, you know, how he knew him, but and he was in the Marine Corps. Yeah.
Good connection.
Well, I'm sure Roddenberry met many people.
Wow.
It's not like, you know, he almost got married to him or anything like that, because that was
okay. That
was the 60s, not the 70s. But now.
You know, okay. I couldn't agree more with what William was saying. I think Roddenberry came out of an era of back-to-back wars. We were already involved in Vietnam. And this was such a hotbed of political conflict and, you know, people divided in their views on the war, and in the middle of this comes this television series that is supposed to take us out of our daily lives into different worlds on a weekly basis at a very low budget. Interesting, we talked about the robots in Star Wars just a little bit earlier, and if you go back to the original series, besides the computer, which was the ship, it seemed like, at least it was available at every port on the ship, every portal, every office, every room. I'm pretty sure if they ever showed the latrine, it would have been a you know, computer terminal in there, too. But they didn't have
flush now
robots, per se, R2-D2 and C-3PO, that followed them around in human-like form to carry out menial tasks or even, you know, specialized tasks. What Roddenberry did was, especially with the early writing, was he went back to the human element. And it didn't matter if it was an alien that was purple with eight legs, it came down to the human element, how one affected the other and you know, how they interacted and how they ended up either learning to get along, which most of the time they did by the end of the hour episode. You know, again, it was a big view of how different people can understand each other in new ways and a positive hope, almost a new hope,
okay,
if you would like to say it that way.
Okay, we've talked generally about it. Now let's talk more specifically. The entire first official run.
God. You know, I mean, it was entertaining, but it didn't seem to me like the film quality and tightness. And it didn't have the same tightness as something like All in the Family or Mary Tyler Moore. You know, it still got across the fact that, hey, we're going to throw some people in these kind of cheesy, cheap-looking uniforms. And put them on basically two sets, the bridge and whatever else we have to show.
The Rock with the Red Sky.
Yeah, love that Rock.
Yep.
And do a few things with it, but they could do it simply because it really, in some respects, was like a play where you're really looking at character development and the dialogue. The setting was just a secondary or tertiary concern. But as far as looking, I would say, like professional TV, it didn't. I mean, not to me, compared to some of the other sitcoms and stuff that were on at the time, it looked kind of thrown together.
Well, for
sure, that's just my opinion.
They did not throw money at this show. He probably had to beg, borrow, and steal to get all the money that he had. For what he had, I think it came off pretty well. Let's talk a little bit about William Shatner's acting.
Jeff. Why would you ask this question?
I've seen him in interviews and stuff, but, I mean, did he kind of fake it up? That's all I really want to know.
You know, he was a stand-up comic before he got into this.
Really?
And a serious actor. He had done some other TV stuff, a Twilight Zone episode here and there, and stage plays. My mother met him when he was acting in a stage play up in Canada. My grandmother rented him a room. Yeah, it gets really good after that.
And a streetcar named Enterprise.
But, you know, he part of, I think, the way they got away from not diving into each character's complete three-dimensional persona is the fact that this was a military operation. He was the commander-in-chief of that vessel. There was supposed to be a certain regimented interaction between he and his crewmates. Now, obviously, he was closer to Bones and to Spock and to Scotty and a few of the others than the rest of the crew, but still they had to maintain that military protocol. That got them away from having to dive into extreme friendships in every episode and very deep personalities.
You know, especially in the first dozen or so episodes where you had more crew members who were sort of nameless or throwaways, they did have much more of a military bearing in those early episodes to me. You don't see that again in the Star Trek universe until you get to Deep Space Nine and a little bit of Voyager, both of the non-Enterprise series. You get some aspects of that, but also it tends to be early on in their story development that you see the bureaucracy or the formal relationships, and later on you get to dive into knowing the characters and seeing what's happening when they're not on duty. Or, you know, rather than, you know, I mean, because imagine if you had a reality TV show about, you know, the Marine Corps. Most, you know, for most weeks you'd see these guys marching back and forth, policing the grounds, going through PT. Not a lot of action. You got to consider that the Enterprise itself, if it was really going out on exploration missions, it would be like garrison duty too. They'd probably have weeks where nothing happens except for the same daily routines. And the episodes are about those highlights where something happens.
Exactly.
Star Wars, as we all know, written by George Lucas, taking a lot of cues from myths, stories, etc.
Seven Samurai.
Yep, a lot of films, a lot of themes in films, but mostly themes about heroes, villains, quests, that kind of thing. So,
you want the flat-out truth about that? If Star Wars had not been successful, and they never made The Empire Strikes Back, it would have been junked in a drawer with 100 other movies with the same exact storyline. Boy meets girl, girl gets in trouble, boy saves girl. It just put a different color on it. That's all they did.
Well,
but obviously we know there was much more to it. We're all eternally grateful that he made money, was able to make the rest of the movies, and take everything to a different level. Because boy never saved his sister before.
Now, okay, but hold on just a second, though. It wasn't just chance. What they did is they knew that there was these comic book fans, and so they went to San Diego, and they pitched it to the Comic-Con in 1976, and they said this new movie's coming out, it's called Star Wars, and they had the pictures of Darth Vader and different things, and to kind of get the fans kind of churning, because there was no internet back then, and so that's kind of how it started.
All I'm saying is they used a tried and true prescription for the story, for the basic first story. A New Hope was has been told many times and in, with variations.
But you are, okay, but you're kind of looking down and say, well, it's just a story.
But no, I'm saying if that's all it was ever made,
okay,
it would have been just that story.
So just making the marketing point.
But
correct.
Right. But not only that, but when have you been in a situation, you know, you feel like you're on your own and you're facing this thing, and sometimes I think of Luke in the trench. I'm by myself. I have one shot to do whatever I need to do. And it's just like, am I going to do it?
Yeah.
Am I gonna and I'm shrug it off and go, hey, do you ever think about that for Star Trek? I never do.
No.
I do. You know, okay.
The heroism factor in Star Trek is relatively low because usually it's an ensemble, it's a crew, it's a team.
Or it's Kirk one-on-one with his fists, which we know, we know who's going to win.
I think that's why he found the green alien. To avoid the fisticuffs.
Oh boy. Okay.
But you're right. And if it hadn't been Luke,
right.
I mean, let's say we didn't know about all the other episodes. If it hadn't been Luke as the one guy in the trench who made it, it would have been some other flyboy who was the hero. I mean,
what if Red 11 made the shot?
One of them was going to be it, but even still, it would be
right.
Down to. And so I think that trails back to more of the people's experiences with things like the World War II. Movies
true.
Where
absolutely
where they have this, and it's like, hey, here it's Hellcats of
the
Pacific,
you
know,
Lion Leatherneck.
Sure,
yeah.
Absolutely. You have one shot, and if you don't make it, we're all dead.
And they're going to go out trying,
right? Now, because I mean, you guys are saying statements like, "Well, Star Trek is a thinking man's thing." Fine, but what I like about Star Wars is it cuts through to the core, and people can associate with it. The stories are stories that have been told and retold, and you're right. It is a retread from whatever.
Joseph Campbell, Hero
yeah.
of a Thousand Faces, it's all
right.
Going to say, look, it's following the classic trilogy story,
right.
Except unlike many others, but it starts off the same way the Black Cauldron series for fantasy. The boy goes out and tries to discover himself, and there's usually an aspect of showing up or discovering father in his past. And so, you know,
right.
The boy is the father of the man, and you get to see that through the three episodes in the original trilogy.
So Star Wars makes a splash, then we go to Empire Strikes Back, then we start to learn more about Darth Vader and all this kind of stuff. And let's kind of talk about it as a whole.
I was disappointed with Empire Strikes Back when it first came out, because like everybody else, I went and saw it the first weekend. Mm-hmm. I was expecting a beginning, a middle, and an end, instead of just a middle.
Yeah.
I hadn't bought into the full trilogy thing at that point. Star Wars had a beginning, middle, and an end, and I thought all the movies were going to. It hooked me for another 2 years until Jedi came out. And that's what it did to me, and it upset me that it hooked me.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to know what was going to happen now. Looking back on it, I'm fond of it. I mean, I own the movies. I you know, every time they come out with a different release, a different version, you know, a new special editor's version, whatever, I go out and buy them, you know. Looking forward to the full six final version box set when it finally comes out.
It exceeded my expectations. For a sophomore or second release motion picture, it didn't let me down. I felt the anxiety when it ended, saying, wait a minute,
mm-hmm.
This is at least a half hour too early. You've got to have something next. But then again, it had me hooked, because I was like, wait a minute. They had the huevos not to have it end with some awards ceremony
right.
or everything nicely wrapped up in a box, but saying, you know what, sometimes things don't work out perfectly. That's the way life is. I mean, considering
right.
everything they accomplished, they're lucky to be where they're at. But Han Solo in Carbonite? Luke losing his hand? I mean, wow. This
yeah.
stuff could happen?
Yeah.
What a great serial for me. At that point, I started thinking, what if they had been doing this as a radio series back when they would have done radio series?
Cliffhangers.
This would have been great.
Right.
Who knows what the shadow knows?
Classic cliffhanger.
Is Luke really related to Darth?
Obviously, they knew they were going to produce the third movie at that point. They weren't going to just leave it hanging. You know, I'm surprised they didn't bother doing it or thinking about doing it the way I understand they did Back to the Future, like you brought up before. We just film them all at the same time and overlap them and, you know, mix them all together and do it like that. Save some money on production.
Lucas had to borrow money from 20th Century Fox to get Star Wars made.
Right.
And because of that,
and
he
then 20th Century Fox borrowed money from him after that for some other things they were going to do.
Okay, I don't know that. But what he decided is to use the money that he made to buy his own equipment and to make it himself. And so he became a mogul. Now, I don't know if Roddenberry ever did that.
Oh, I'm fairly certain he didn't. I think
Roddenberry
probably focused on the writing,
right,
as opposed to the directing, producing, and the technical aspect.
Yeah, he kept his hand in producing, I think, was executive producer.
Producing, right, which is writing.
But you're right. No, he was more into, like we talked about earlier, he was into the human relations. You know, even if it was alien and human, or alien and alien, that's where he kept the focus.
Okay.
If he had the budgets, and he should have for the, I would assume, for the movies, you know, and did a fair job with the special effects for the movies, but we started with Star Wars. We're seeing something on the screen we never saw before. You know, blasters. We're seeing, you know, these hovercraft that do Mach 2 and stuff, you know, 3 feet off the ground, and, you know, cool things that we always wanted to see, but they never had in movies before.
And critters. I mean,
yeah,
between Jawas and the Tauntauns.
And even the Sand People, you never get to see a whole lot. I mean, yeah, and in the bar scene, yeah, a little puppetish for some of them, but obviously we're going to have a diverse range of characters and creators that we're going to see, and that was cool.
For Star Wars, I think it felt like there was a more well-formed universe or tapestry in which everything's taking place, whereas Star Trek, it seemed it was more down to the people and the little bits. You'd explore and discover little bits, but sometimes there wasn't as much concern about making them all fit together in a big thing. But it seemed like in Star Wars, it was the big picture, and
right. These
are the little elements, the focal points happening in the big picture that draws it together.
My personal opinion is the biggest difference between the two right there, what you're talking about, there was absolutely no spiritual aspect, or very little spiritual aspect of Star Trek.
Other than
only
the Vulcan
mysticism is basically, you get into that, beyond that, very little spiritual anything.
DS9, they had the
Bajoran
stuff. Right,
when we find out about the Force in Star Wars.
Right.
It combines everything. It is every molecule of the universe. And it's all-encompassing. And it does make it a smaller place. It makes it more, we're all dependent upon each other and all that kind of stuff. So I did like that aspect of it.
But
a lot.
Roddenberry was a visionary as far as his writing goes. What I think the main difference between Lucas and Roddenberry is Lucas was a visionary as far as the medium itself.
Agreed.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he sat down with the six guys in ILM early on and said, okay, we want to build
Industrial
these ships.
Industrial Light and Magic.
We want to build these ships. We want to, can we do these motion control shots where make ships look like they're flying fast in space?
If nothing
and
else.
John Dyke should, yeah. Sure.
In a simplistic way, Roddenberry wanted to tell stories.
Right.
Lucas wanted to show stories.
But I was going to say, even if Lucas's Star Wars movies didn't do too well, it still gave him a place to experiment and develop the tools and techniques which he's developed, which other people are using. I mean, he's got to be making money off of the things, I mean, between the sound systems, the way
right.
that they do special effects now. Just developing those. The movies give him a chance to exercise.
True.
And to be able to pay. Rather than saying we're going to have research and development costs, this is just a cost of making that movie. And then the benefit is now you have something which you can sell,
mm-hmm.
you can license, you can rent, and you can reuse for other people's purposes. So he was more of a master of the medium.
Some people don't like him because he's such a hermit, this and that, something else. But the one thing he did do is he sat down and he said, the people deserve to hear films well.
Yeah.
If you're going to lay down your $6, your $8, your $9, $10
Absolutely.
Now, whatever it is, you deserve to hear it well.
So
that's why
I waited on pins and needles when I had my first DVD player to see episode one
mm-hmm.
and just hear that opening sequence where you see the battlecruiser coming across the top of the screen and it just fills
Amen.
The entire
episode
I wanted
four.
To feel that.
Yeah.
Episode four.
Right.
You know what I meant.
The first filmed movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Agreed. I think that, A, the theaters had a mad rush in the 80s to get themselves upgraded with better sound systems. Stuff that wasn't just, you know, from your brother's basement, you know,
right.
grotto. And the home entertainment system. You know, the whole boom to have more consumer electronics in the auto, inside the home
mm-hmm.
also was very well impacted by the technology they did. And agreed, when I got the full surround sound set up, the first two things I wanted to see was I wanted to see that Star Destroyer come
yes.
zooming over my head, and I wanted to feel it from back behind my skull.
Right, right.
And then there was another scene inside. That was the CD from Dire Straits. I just wanted to hear. I wanted to hear the whole Dire Straits. I had on vinyl and CD, and I still think the vinyl was better.
Did you get your MTV?
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, but yeah, for that,
yeah.
I mean, that's the way to test the system.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And you could, when the escape pod leaves the ship and goes down to Tatooine, another great scene because you go from loud to quiet to the whooshing.
And I think the thing, too, is that Lucas had people around him that made those films that thought about every single aspect. Say what you will about his directing job of late, he really had a firm grasp on, first of all, okay, Roddenberry did a fantastic job, as Lucas did, creating an entire universe of creatures and this and that and something else. You know, we talked about before, because of the TV show and the limits of the TV show and then not having enough money, that really kind of cut things down. So the play would be the thing for the TV show. Had to be. I mean, all it was actors and a script. But with the Star Wars films, because there's more millions of dollars at that point, then Lucas could sit back and say, I want a sound that sounds like this, and then Ben Burtt could make that sound. And I think as far as that goes, the thought was a lot deeper as far as the full scope of it. I mean, you were just talking about the whooshing of the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever listen for that on your TV in Star Trek? No.
You know,
it may be a wind.
If you look at it,
there's the door opening noise and the teleporter noise.
Okay.
Everything else doesn't matter.
Look at the time frame, though. Late 60s, late 70s. You know what was invented in between that? Synthesizers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. And you could buy them in any music store. And all of a sudden, the world has opened up to a little bit of technology that can go a long ways with a vivid imagination.
Now,
I remember the story about looking for... I had heard this on some documentary. It may have been a lie, or I could be misremembering it just for my own evil purposes. But they were looking for the blaster fire sound for Star Wars. And supposedly, they had found some tension wires that they started whacking to get the right noise, and then they could stretch it and play with it. And I was like, wow, this is found stuff. Now, later on, of course, he gets to create it in his labs.
Right.
But just, yeah, the crafting of it.
Lucas told Ben Burtt is to find sounds that you find today, and then we'll either synthesize it or computerize it, and then we'll put it together.
I was just watching.
Because Chewbacca's like a bear and dog and something else.
Well, I'd heard that the Ewok chanting song was like Tibetan chants played backwards or something like that. And I think that's a great way of getting something that has certain intonations that make it sound authentic.
Absolutely.
Whereas you look at something like in the Star Trek universe, you got the people talking Klingon. I mean, no matter what these people do with it, it sounds bogus. Whereas I've heard people try to do the whole speaking Elvish from Tolkien.
Right.
Well, this guy was a linguistics major, and that sounds plausible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, especially if you heard people talking Gaelic, and you go, man, were these people sick? But
nobody likes Episode 1. Does anybody like Episode 1 here?
I thought it was great that it came out, because it gave me a fix.
Yeah.
I mean, I had been waiting so long to have a Star Wars movie. Everyone kept telling me there was going to be one, and I had stopped believing. And so it was nice that it came out. And it was great when it ended, because I was like, good, now we can wait for the next one. But, I mean, at that point, I was just into waiting for the next one.
It was the Empire Strikes Back of the new one.
It's not in my top three.
Of the last three?
It's not in my top three of the six.
Oh, okay. I enjoyed it, same reason. I waited a long time, memories, looking forward to what the new technology was going to bring as far as special effects went, and wasn't disappointed as far as that went, but
yeah, it was kind of like Star Trek's movie 4.
Yeah, exactly.
Except they didn't have whales.
Right.
They had midichlorians.
Yeah.
And Jar Jar.
And Jar Jar Binks.
Well, okay.
Not Lucas's finest hour.
Yeah, you have your red planet with a red rock, and we've got Jar Jar. So
okay,
there you go. But let's kind of talk about Lucas's foray into TV. One that's hard to talk about, and the other that's not so hard to talk about.
The Christmas special?
The holiday special.
I wish I could see that again. I remember watching it as a kid going, hey, cool, this is neat. It had a little cartoon thing in it, and it had the stormtroopers beaten up on his little computer, and look, we've got Wookiee kids. Isn't it cute? It's furry, and it's your friend. You could go roller skating with it, I guess, if you wanted to.
I haven't seen it.
What's the Maude? She's still alive, though.
Bea Arthur?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, man, I mean,
I wish no ill upon anyone.
I wish they'd replay it because these people need the money from the residuals. And I mean, it's kind of like when they took away the Little Rascals.
Yeah, but Norton's dead. Because Norton was in there.
Okay, well, so they don't all get paid, but maybe their estates do. But I mean, you know, it's terrible to create something and have it go away. It's not like this was the Chevy Chase, you know, talk show.
Yeah.
That needed to go away.
Our best defense.
Chevy who?
Chevy Chase.
Right. Okay, so how did
President
it
Ford?
Best part about it was the Boba Fett cartoon.
Boba Fett.
Okay, and now the easier thing to talk about is the cartoons that were on the Cartoon Network.
Oh, that was neat.
Right.
Why did it stop? Were they done?
Yeah. Because what they wanted to do was kind of introduce, and from what I understand, the first run, see, I thought it was just filler material. But no, they said that all cartoons are actually canon to the Star Wars story. And that the second set actually led right up to Revenge of the Sith. So.
That's nice.
Yeah. I enjoyed telling that story.
I enjoyed hearing about it.
I enjoyed them. They seemed like they were too short and disjointed for me to realize. I mean, I felt like you needed to see all of it together without having all the constant, oh, here's the next episode and here's what you missed. I mean, because it was way too ADD. Nowadays, if they wanted to broadcast that on people's cell phones, fine, go for that. But it might as well have just call it 13 commercials rather than episodes. If they could put it together for me and cut out the filler crudola, then I could be interested. But
it would be 40 minutes long.
But some of it was hard to follow. I mean, with all the explosions and things, I felt like I was getting like this, you know, the whole the motion sickness thing. Not, I mean, I was like, what's left? What's right? I just got a little confused.
Not knowing, I guess, if it was a Japanese produced, was it Speed Racer that was the star?
Yeah.
I never saw him, so I'm just, just throwing it out there.
Okay, so let's kind of do an end conclusion. We've kind of talked
a lot about Star Trek.
Very specifically about Star Trek. And we also talk generally about Star Wars. But, so I mean...
Well, you have to have an innovator and an imitator. And I think that's why we spent more time on the innovator.
All right.
Oh, gosh. Star Wars had evil and good. It didn't just have, oh, here's what happens. You know, it had battles. It had epicness to it. It had a richness,
a
depth to it.
Right.
You know that if there is a glass sitting on a counter in the bar, it had purpose and function. There was something behind it. Every alien to me felt real and representative of other things, not just, oh, here's a guy who has white on the left and black on the right, and here's a guy who has black on the left, white on the right. They're opposites. How can we make them get along? Come on, it's just paint.
Make them stand on the side that match.
Whereas, I mean, this, I felt like Star Wars was more about the nitty-grittiness of human stuff, whereas people don't get along, and there is evil, and there is greed, and there is malice, and there is lies, and treachery, and power, and ambition. And how far can people go with this? But then there's the side of, you know what? Ultimately, that sort of stuff is going to fall to the goodwill and cooperation of people who don't want this sort of injustice. And it's going to take a group of them together, and one or two of them are going to be the heroes shooting that photon down that pipe or blowing up that evil Death Star. Let's get rid of the machines of death and doom. Robots, the drone, you know, the clones and all. You got all these robots going around killing people and stuff like that. Some are servants, some are evil. Gosh, technology has this is a two-edged sword in Star Wars.
Technology traditionally has progressed to serve the military first, and it continues to do so. We wouldn't have the computer graphics we have today if it wasn't for the military stuff that was produced 10 years ago, you know, and the need of the military.
Forced labor, enslavement, you know, these are things that show up in Star Wars that you couldn't broach with something in the 60s or 50s because it would be one of those things that you'd say, well, that doesn't really happen, or it's not for polite company.
Okay. And they did try and stay away from hot topics. I mean, they delved in some of them in a sideways way in Star Trek, but like we're talking about, it was the middle of the Vietnam War. It was the middle of huge unrest across the nation as far as the racism issues. And
right.
Star Trek by itself did more as one show to try and create peace among all those factions than any other show on TV. 6 o'clock news wasn't getting it done.
But was everybody watching Star Trek, though?
No.
Come on.
Not at all. You had a huge...
I cannot see somebody who's a big All in the Family fan sitting down and watching Star Trek. I can't see it.
I beg to differ. My folks were the one. That's why we watched both. We understood the comedy in All in the Family. We looked at Star Trek as science fiction. I went and saw an episode, Spock's Brain. William, you remember that one? Where the alien women come to steal Spock's brain because they need something to control the computer that runs their planet?
Didn't I see that episode once again? I mean, no, wait.
I went to the improv.
Didn't Pauly Shore do a remake of that as a movie? I mean, some of those episodes were really dumb.
I saw a live-action remake of that episode verbatim off the original script, and it was so campy, done from the 60s, they didn't have to change one line, and it was hilarious. Now, they changed the facial features and their expressions and things to play along with it, but it was hilarious to watch that episode done on stage live. Nothing's going to stand to the test of time. It really isn't. I mean, I have a hard time believing 100 years from now we're going to think any of these things are anywhere close to being state of the art. We might see them as wonderful classics. How many times do you go back and watch, silent movies and say, well, this was a milestone for the motion picture business?
Modern Times, Charlie Chaplin.
Okay, let's kind of cut.
The exception.
Let's cut to the end run now. In 100 years, what is going to be remembered, Star Trek or Star Wars, and why?
Star Wars, because when episode 20 comes out.
Star Trek, obviously, because it's going to still be on TV in the 75th edition of whatever series they're going to promote through the thing,
I think Star Wars has more of a possibility for us to see things similar in our own evolution into the forays into space. Things like mining and freighter runs. I think the Star Trek stuff, some of it could be, but
the interesting thing I find is that there was basically 10 years difference between the original series of Star Trek and Star Wars, the first movie that came out. And in that short period of time, the difference in the way we looked at things and the advancements made in technology made us think, look at Star Trek, Star Wars. I mean, the possibilities here, Star Trek, come on, 100 years from now, it's going to be a little kid's show. As far as the show goes, as far as special effects, as far as what might have been for, alien creatures or planetary exploration and stuff like that, I don't think either one is going to stand up as the precursor to modern technology 100 years from now. But it was a nice idea. I think, if anything, Star Wars is going to be remembered as, for a period of time, especially in the special effects world, the one to be. It was the one to come close to, the one to aspire to be.
If nothing else, I think it's probably the only 6-movie story arc. Hmm. It's only septology or whatever you'd call that.
No, that's true, because James Bond, it's just the same thing over and over.
Yeah, and you don't think of it as going from a beginning to an end.
Again, James Bond, Tarzan with a gun.
My hands are dirty too, baby. What are you Wasting my time. Wasting my time. Wasting my time. Wasting my time. You like me because I'm a scoundrel. There aren't enough scoundrels in your life. You like me because I'm a scoundrel. There aren't enough scoundrels in your life. And I know. I know you love me. I know.
That was Twin Sister again with their song, Scoundrel. Well, we've come to the end of episode 1 of Roni's Own Radio, and I thank you so much for listening. I thank you also for your thoughts or input regarding the show, regarding the subjects of the show, and where we're going, and what we're doing with it. I certainly appreciate it. You can email me at jeff.roni@gmail.com. I'm Jeff Roni, and I'm signing off.
Roni Zone Radio.